is the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the radio station you're listening to, but they're my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. And certainly we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line right now a Mr. Barry Clausen. And Barry Clausen is a fascinating individual. He's an investigative journalist who, of course, has been looking into environmental issues and environmental terrorism. Yes, long before the 9/11 attack on the World Trade Center, we had environmental terrorists operating openly in this country, and high government officials have consistently refused to do anything about them any more than they would do anything about the Islamic terrorists who they knew were operating in this country and they were monitoring, but they did absolutely nothing about them. And you have to ask yourself why that would go on. Barry, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, I'm glad to be with you.
All right, now, of course, you've infiltrated the environmental terrorists or the terrorist movement. Why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about when you infiltrated them and what you actually learned about how they were planning to disrupt our society? And then, of course, why nothing is being done about them. Nothing was done then, and nothing's really being done effectively now.
Well, in 1989, I was working for the U.S. Forest Service, or up until 1989, and several of the people that I worked with attended Earth First meetings in Bozeman, Montana, and I went with them one night. And, my first reaction is, some of these people are nuts. I mean, the way they act, their political ideologies, their beliefs, don't even coincide with normal society. So I did go to a couple more meetings. I then had the opportunity to go to a Forest Service conference, and I had discovered what some of these people had been involved with, the sabotage of a lot of logging equipment, mining equipment, arsons, that kind of a thing. And so when I quit the Forest Service, I had the opportunity, at the expense of some members of the timber industry, to infiltrate this organization and spend a year there.
In other words, the timber industry wanted to find out what they were doing. They weren't getting that much help from the law enforcement, so they hired you to infiltrate it and find out what was going on?
Well, I have a background within the judicial system before I worked for the Forest Service. So they did hire me, but I will emphasize that it was no timber company that hired me. It was individuals
that
hired me. And, so I spent a whole year within this group, and we actually had 1 year, and we had been asked to become involved, myself and my partner, who was a female. We had been involved to sabotage a logging company helicopter. When we notified the FBI, nothing was done. We made sure that the helicopter wasn't sabotaged. But that was my first clue as to who these people were, what they were doing, and how little, if anything, the government was doing to catch them.
But, of course, if somebody sabotaged a helicopter, somebody could die.
Well, there has been 3 helicopter sabotage prior to this one that we were asked to, and nobody died. But
but there's the potential for that. Oh. I mean, this is just totally irresponsible. And when the government knows about it and does nothing ahead of time, doesn't that give you serious pause for concern?
Oh, absolutely. And to this day, I'm appalled, because there has been a few arrests, and but the arrests have not been by federal agencies or agents. The arrests have been as a result of local law enforcement, or like a case up in Oregon where these nuts burned up a bunch of logging trucks they didn't like. And this is just about a year or so ago.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Well, our guest today, this is Dr. Stan here, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news. Our guest today is Barry Clausen, and Barry Clausen has written a wonderful book, which we incidentally do carry. It's called burning rage. And he, in that book, he talks about his personal experience actually infiltrating the environmental terrorist movement. And the great tragedy is, of course, that our government knows a great deal about these environmental terrorists, and the federal government refuses to enforce the laws. It seems like the environmental terrorists can operate outside the law. Certainly the local law enforcement on several occasions has arrested some of these people, but sometimes aren't the local law enforcement people actually advised are ready to sort of leave this go? Or how does this work between the local and the federal officials?
Well, unfortunately, it's sort of one-sided. Sheriffs and police departments will supply information to federal agencies, but the federal agencies supply very little back. And any police officer you ask will verify that statement, because it's just common knowledge and it's a fact. But like up there in Oregon, where these kids had burned up these logging equipment, log trucks, one of them that had done it went out with a lady on a date, and on the date he bragged about what he had done. Well, it just so happened that this young lady's father was the state fire marshal. So when she told her dad about this date she had, he called the FBI, and the FBI did arrest the people, but it wasn't a result of an FBI investigation.
And so the FBI, of course, is not supposed to be investigating. It is not investigating. Occasionally it's put in an embarrassing position of having to do something, but of course it's very loath to do it. It's pretty hard, though, to ignore when somebody's openly confessed and bragged about burning up lumber trucks.
But in all fairness, though, it is a very difficult thing to do to catch them, because they are so well trained. They have books they publish that actually talk about how to do it and how not to get caught. And well, matter of fact, David Foreman wrote one called Eco Defense, and it's how to sabotage everything from logging, mining, ranching equipment to boats and helicopters. And, you know, so their training is very intense.
Well, but I think what you have to point out, in fact, is that it takes a lot of money to finance these professional environmentalists. It takes a lot of money to set up the camps to train the terrorists. It takes a lot of money to publish the books that tell these young people how to do these things. It takes a lot of money even to finance the young people as they're traveling from place to place, you know, where they're learning to be professional terrorists. And the great tragedy is that today, nobody ever asks, where is the money coming from? You know, you follow the money, you can sometimes get to the source of your problem. But unfortunately, our officials, in many instances, are not following the money, because it leads to very highly placed people.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of... Want to break?
Right. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest right now is Barry Clausen, author of Burning Rage. And Barry, why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners, you know, about the things that you've uncovered as you've looked into the environmentalist movement and the environmental terrorist movement.
Well, I know you've read my book.
I certainly have, and it's a fascinating book, and I recommend it. That's why we carry it here at Radio Liberty. Burning Rage gives you insight that you're not going to get through the regular media. As to these terrorists that have been here, and they were here long before, well, the Islamic terrorist movement was here as well, and once again, very little was done about them ahead of time, although they knew they were here, and they knew the environmental terrorists were here as well.
Well, if you know how to do it, it's very simple to access financial records. And when I started doing that and I started discovering where some of these young people were getting their money, I would actually call the company or the foundation or the organization or business, whatever it was, and ask them if they knew what they were doing. And to this day, I've never had one admit it. And I guess the best story in my book refers to Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream and how much money Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream has given to them. And I actually list the groups and who they've given it to.
You're talking about the environmental terrorist organizations, or just environmental organizations?
No, I'm talking about environmental terrorist organizations, right. Primarily Earth First.
All right. And Ben and Jerry Ice Cream Company financing the environmental terrorists, and they deny it, or they said they just didn't know what they were up to?
Well, some people sent them a letter when I did a story on it. And they sent these letters out, and then people would send me copies of the letters, you know, and they totally denied that they had any involvement or they had ever donated any money to these groups. So what I did was I dug farther to find out more groups, and then I put that out. And, you know, then Ben and Jerry's was pretty upset about that. But you can't deny the fact that they did. And to this day, they've never acknowledged it. But when you look at their 990s, it's all right in there.
All right, actually, of course, but it's not just Ben and Jerry's. People like Ted Turner have been putting a lot of money into not only the environmental movement, but the environmental terrorist movement.
Oh, yeah, and then you've got the W. Alton Jones Foundation, which is run by Pete Myers, who's a friend of Al Gore's. But there's so many foundations and organizations. There's 186 of them that are part of what's called the Environmental Grant Makers Association.
186 organizations?
Foundations that contribute $1 billion a year. You know, and it's like, for those of us that suffer as a result of what these people do, you know, you buy Heinz ketchup. Teresa Heinz is one of those that contributes to it, and her husband is now going to be running for the U.S. Senate. For the U.S. presidency and as a Democrat in the next election, he says.
Well, it makes us feel sort of warm and fuzzy to know we're going to have people like that maybe right in the White House.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think he'll ever get there once rural America finds out that his wife is you know, one of the Heinz heirs and what Heinz does. But right now, it just isn't coming out.
Now, what is this man's name?
You know, I can't remember. It's a Democrat, the tall guy with gray hair, kind of dashing-looking fella.
All right, fine. Is he a senator or what?
Yeah, he's a senator right now.
All right, fine. Well, we'll get this. Gary Hart's name comes to mind.
No, it wasn't Gary Hart. I wish I could remember, but I can't remember.
All right, fine. Well, we'll get it later. Unfortunately, we don't have to worry about that for another year. Anyway, of course, this whole environmental terrorist movement being funded by people of great wealth, and then, of course, we wonder why nothing's ever done about them, and maybe that is the explanation. Because obviously they must have friends in very high positions within our government. Certainly they are constantly covered up by the controlled media, and these things are never dramatized. If we were hearing day after day after day about the environmental terrorists, why, a lot of people would be concerned about it. But if we never hear about it, or we hear about it one time, or there's a terrorist action up there in Oregon, but we never hear it outside of Oregon, or they burned down a ski lodge in Colorado. We read about it one day and never mentioned again.
And that's very correct. But you know, when you look at the liberal media and who they are and what they control and how they actually fund young people in their journalism careers, it's no wonder that we're not seeing it in the press.
Well, of course, now, what sort of things have they done? And we talked during the last hour really about how the environmental terrorists really were behind this battle in Seattle a couple of years ago.
And, yeah, but, they came from all over the place for that.
But, of course, weren't they, somebody had to pay for them to come, somebody had to coordinate that. It costs a lot of money to coordinate something like that and set up the medical support and get the communication out. Money has to be put in to make the arrangements for these major demonstrations and coordinate it, don't they?
Yes, excuse me. But the one thing, you know, we've never been able to find out, you know, if somebody gave them $100,000 or $200,000. But here's the way that we believe it works is, you know, like Ted Turner will fund an organization. And then that organization, they have to turn in their 990s to the government. And they do that. But what you'll see in there is things like they may have $1 million budget for the year. And all of it is to train activists and to educate people about, you know, the nasty things the timber companies are doing or whatever. But then you'll see down there it'll say $250,000 for activist empowerment. But you can't ever find out what activist empowerment is. So here's $250,000 unaccounted for. And we do believe that that's where the money comes from for those types of activities.
Well, now there was an organization known as Ruckus, and weren't they the ones who were training the demonstrators how to be violent and how to break laws and get away with it?
Well, actually what they did was they go and they recruit young people to become involved in the Ruckus Society, and then they train them in the art of civil disobedience. Okay, then the art of civil disobedience progressively gets worse and becomes, throwing a rock through a window. And then it becomes progressively worse where you see somebody involved in arson.
But now, didn't they actually teach them, you know, when you're going to be there, why you take along water to wash your eyes out when the police throw the tear gas? And, you know, if you got a tear gas or a gas mask, to take it along, anticipating the violence that they're going to promote? Weren't a lot of these people instructed ahead of time just how to deal with the police response?
Oh, exactly. But the thing about it that I look at there is, how did they know the police were going to react to something violent if they weren't planning on being violent to start with? and their backpacks, you know, a lot of them had backpacks with rocks in them, big rocks, and they threw through the windows in Seattle. They also, like you said, they had towels and they had water and everything to wash their eyes out. So they knew in advance what they were going to do. But yet the mayor of Seattle on national television telling the world that they had promised him that they wouldn't do anything.
Well, I don't think the mayor of Seattle was that stupid. He actually gave the police orders not to do anything, not to interact with him, and to let this thing get out of hand exactly as they did with the Rodney King riots, where orders were given to the police officers, don't do anything, let them vent their rage.
Well, I was actually in Seattle prior to the WTO, and I do I have friends in the Seattle Police Department that I socialize with and play golf with, and everybody knew there was going to be a riot. They actually went to the mayor of Seattle and the city council and told them what they knew was going to happen. And the mayor didn't believe them. He thought that if the police were not there in riot gear and everything else, that everything would just be fine. So what many of the police officers did that weren't allowed to wear riot gear is they had their own vehicles, or they had patrol cars with all of their riot gear in the trunks, around a corner or the next block or something. So when everything got out of control, they went to their vehicles and got their riot gear.
Well, of course, actually, this whole thing had been practiced in Eugene several months before, hadn't they, exactly how they were going to carry out this riot in Seattle?
Oh, yeah, they had I can't remember what the date was, but it was like 3 or 4 months before the WTO riots. They did one in Eugene, Oregon, where they smashed the windows in a couple of banks and a leather store, several fast food chain stores, one of them is McDonald's, and it was just a prelude to what was going to happen at the WTO. And I know the Seattle Police Department had worked with the Eugene Police Department to identify the people that had been arrested down there, and many of those same people were also arrested in Seattle.
All right, fine. And, of course, nothing much was done to them. After, you know, I don't know how many millions of dollars damage was done. Well, let's go to Fred calling. Hi, Fred. Fred from Salinas. Do you have a question or comment, Fred?
Yes, good afternoon. I was wondering if your guests could talk about PETA.
About PETA, you mean the organization that's
yes,
so more concerned about animals than they are about
human beings? Well, it seems like in a lot of their dealings, they're just about as out front environmental activists as you can get on some.
All right, do you have any comments on PETA at all, Barry?
Oh yes, I do, and none of them are nice. No, but what you've got in my book actually, there's quite a bit on PETA, and. You know, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, they contributed $35,000 to the defense of Rodney Adam Coronado, who was convicted of an arson at the University of Michigan several years ago. They do promote that kind of stuff within their following, and a good example of that is a fellow that was in Seattle several years ago who I was monitoring his group, and this group went over and they smashed windows in meat markets and did a lot of vandalism, and that was like 4 years ago, and just within the last 6 months, he was arrested in New York as part of this new Shack group that's going after Huntington Life Sciences, where they're doing all of the demonstrations, and they've actually sent 3 bombs to the company, beat up the CEO of the company with baseball bats.
But, of course, the trouble is these people are not punished for their crimes. They get a little slap on the wrist because, of course, there's a force behind them. And my take on PETA, and I'd like your thoughts on this, Barry, is that they're really not interested in animals. They are part of this whole movement to destroy civilization. They have an intense hatred of humanity, and they look upon humanity as the problem.
Well, I would agree with you there. But the young people that are involved think that they're saving animals.
Right.
While the leadership is just, in my opinion, is, you know, creating these new future anarchists.
And, of course, I think this is the problem. I will tell you, Fred, this book, A Burning Rage, which we carry, is excellent, and it has so much in there in the environmental movement you'll never hear any other place. Any other questions?
No, I know I'm originally from Oregon, and I actually spent a lot of time in the Eugene area, and I know what he's talking about.
All right, well, thanks so much.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, Fred?
Okay, fine. Well, thanks so much for calling, Fred, and our telephone number, if we get back from the break, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. The
Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who are actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and a few people have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I certainly want to mention that we hope many of you will give serious consideration to getting some information on Be Alive Royal Jelly. Now, this is really a wonderful product. It's available by calling 1-866-233-7500, and Royal Jelly is, of course, what the queen bee eats, and that's what her diet is when she's in the hive, and she lives about 6 years, and, of course, the rest of the world bees only live perhaps for maybe 6 or 8 weeks. So there's something in the Be Alive Royal Jelly, because all bees are exactly the same. They're all genetically the same. The only difference between the queen bee and the other bees is that the queen bee eats royal jelly. Well, you can read it too. It really does help as far as your energy level is concerned. And ordinarily you take it, and you take it for perhaps 3 months. And at the end of 3 months, if you don't feel that you have more in the way of energy, you simply call them, and they'll give you your money back. The number is 866-233-7500. That's 866-233-7500. We hope that you'll call. We hope that you'll get the royal jelly, and we hope it will help you. I really think it will, because I've taken it for between 8 and 10 years myself. And then, of course, another product which we think is very advantageous is called Alamax. And it's basically allicin. It's the active ingredient in garlic. And garlic, of course, will tend to bring down your blood pressure. It'll tend to bring down your cholesterol level. It has also many wonderful, wonderful qualities. And it was said that during the First World War, it was the young Americans who were chewing on a clove of garlic all the time who didn't get sick and get all the terrible diseases everybody else did. There have been studies done in England with this product, Alamax, that show it actually significantly decreased the incidence of flu and upper respiratory infection. So give them a call at 866-405-4000. That's 866-405-4000. And, of course, if you want to get the royal jelly, that's 866-233-7500. That's 866-233-7500. And let me also mention, of course, that we carry the Miracle 2 soap products, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to getting the Miracle 2 products, the soap, the moisturizer, the lotion, the neutralizer. And we can't make any guarantees on any of this or medical claims, but we will tell you that an awful lot of the people who get the products from us are very, very pleased with them, and we think you will be as well. So if you'd be interested in finding out about Miracle 2 soap products or getting an introductory offer, call 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, Dr. Stan, back here, and our guest is Barry Clausen. His book, Burning Rage, I think you'll find it a fascinating book, giving you insight into the environmental terrorist movement. But of course, more revealing is the fact that despite the fact that government, at least the FBI, knowing it was out there, and many of the FBI agents, good people, trying to do their job, but unfortunately there always seem to be those who are protecting the environmental terrorists. And of course, as Barry brings out in his book, so much of the money comes from our major corporations, people like Barry, the Jerry, and Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream, and Ted Turner, and what are some of the other corporations that are contributing to this? Do you have them?
Well, we had Ford Motor Company was, and they got caught, And there was a big boycott by timber mining and ranching interests to not to buy Ford trucks. And Ford lost hundreds of millions of dollars and, you know, tens of thousands of sales.
But, of course, they've been financing the radical left and communism and socialism, you know, through their great foundation, which owns so much of the stock in Ford Motor Company. This has been carefully concealed, but Ford Motor Company is one of the major reasons why America's in the mess it is today. I'm not the least bit surprised.
Well, but Ford has now, since they were exposed and people quit buying Fords, or so many people quit buying Fords, Ford has now come around and they are trying to balance out between what they contribute to the radical extremists and to the industry groups, like the timber industry groups, that are trying to do something to educate people as to, you know, the truth about trees, what they're used for, and how we need the products.
Well, I wasn't aware of that fact. I wonder if they're doing the same thing as far as the social issues are concerned. But be that as it may, we're talking primarily about environmentalism today. And so once they got caught with their hand in the cookie jar, then they sort of retreated, especially when they got hit in the pocketbook, huh?
Oh, boy, big time, yeah. But can I just throw out something here to you before I forget?
You go right ahead.
I'm going to read it to you here. The Earth First Organizers Conference is on the 14th to 17th of February, 2003, and being held at, Arroyo Seco near Soledad, California.
Arroyo Seco, right.
Just south of Salinas.
Right.
And they're going to hold workshops on civil disobedience and other things down there.
Arroyo Seco, yeah. This is a big place down there. It's a, as I recall, it's somebody maybe can call in from Salinas. They probably know it better than I do.
But the one thing about when they have these conferences, and I'm going to say most of the time, but not always, on the way there or on the way home, you will find sabotage happening as they go or as they come. So, you know, it's something to watch out for.
As I remember, Arroyo Seco is a very nice golf course and nice meeting house. We've got Steve calling in from Wisconsin. Steve, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I have a question for Barry. First of all, Barry, if you would be so kind, at the end of the interview, would you talk to the producer? He has my phone number. I want you to call me when the interview is over with, please.
Sure.
Okay, it's for a radio interview also.
Okay.
Okay, the question I have, and I got part of the first hour that Dr. Stan was with you, and I got part of the second hour. My question is, isn't there a tremendous United Nations tie-in with all this environmental movement, too?
All right. The question is there a tie-in between the United Nations and this environmental movement? What's your response to that?
Well, the answer is yes. But it's so minuscule that it's hardly worth mentioning, at least wise what we can find. You know, there are people that are involved with the UN. They contribute money to the UN. And then they also contribute money to the same extremists. So I can't say that the UN is involved with environmental terrorism, but some of their same supporters are.
And I think that would be the thing. The same people would support the environmental terrorism that would support the United Nations. In fact, Ted Turner is a big supporter of this whole radical environmental movement and, of course, of the United Nations. So you follow the money and you get back to the source. Okay, anything else?
Well, not necessarily so much that the United Nations is directly involved with environmental terrorism, but I feel that there's a strong connection between the UN and the radical environmental movement.
Well, of course, I think it's mainly by the people who are pushing the United Nations, not the organization itself. But they are all working towards the same goal, because, of course, every one of the environmental problems, the solution to it is a new series of government laws.
Right.
Thanks so much, Steve.
And also to depopulate the world.
Well, of course, there is a tremendous hatred of mankind and Western civilization and God's highest creation, which is humanity. You're absolutely right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Steve. Okay, fine. That was Steve calling from Wisconsin. And, of course, there's so much to this story that the average individual doesn't understand. And let me strongly recommend that you consider getting Barry Clausen's book, Burning Rage. And that's Burning Rage. It's available by simply calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention a couple of the other products we carry here at Radio Liberty, which we hope that many of you will be interested in. Certainly one of them would be the Phonopoly. And Phonopoly is a wonderful game. It allows you to teach your children and your grandchildren how to read phonetically, how to pronounce words phonetically, and how to spell phonetically. And it's really a board game. It's played just like Monopoly, and you get a property, and you go around the board, you shake the dice, and you have these little men that move around the board. But in the process, you learn how to pronounce the words. There are 40 sounds in the English language. You learn them. There are about 12 basic rules, and when you know the 40 sounds and the 12 basic rules and you begin to apply them, why, you can certainly read and pronounce words as well as a college graduate, in fact, better than most of them. Now, Phonopoly is not one board game. It's actually 5 board games and 2 bonus games. In other words, they're separate games, and with each game, you learn more information. And in about 16 hours, you can begin to reprogram a child's mind so that they can actually begin to think phonetically and begin to undo all of the harm that has been intentionally done to dumb down our children. If you don't believe that, we include 2 books with a Phonopoly set, and they go into the background of a long-range organized plan to dumb down our population, because, of course, a literate population would never accept the feudalistic sort of society or the one-party system with the phony democracy that we have here in America. We were never a democracy. We were a republic. Phonopoly cost $139.95. You go out to buy most of these programs are $300 or $400 to teach how to read phonetically. $139.95. 5 games, 2 bonus games, and the book. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now. Well, our guest today is Barry Clausen, and of course we're talking about his book, Burning Rage, and his personal experiences having infiltrated the environmental extremist groups. He goes into the siege that the Indian reservation, where one of the gentlemen was actually kept from one of the Indians was, what was his name, Peltier?
Leonard Peltier.
Right, and of course, what was the true story of what happened there? Well, don't have all the answers, but you'll learn things in this book that you'll never, of course, read any other place as far as Peltier and as far as the seeds there on the Indian reservation. And of course, Barry's been on the front lines of so much of the investigation. If you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to give us a call, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-3424-LIBERTY or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We also have 3 or 4 copies of Barry's book, Walking on the Edge. Was that your first book, Barry?
Yes, it was.
We've got several copies of Walking on the Edge. So really, Barry's led a fascinating, adventurous life. I think the sort of life we'd all like to lead. So if you'd like to get one or both of Barry's books, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then if you'd like to give us a call, again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Barry, of course, you talked during the first hour, which of course was not heard on this network, was heard on the shortwave, but you talked a little bit about what was going on up at the Klamath Basin, and why don't you tell the background of that story, and then, of course, what you found through your investigation.
Well, for those that aren't aware of what it is, excuse me, on the Klamath Basin in California, which is right on the Oregon border. On April 6th of 2001, 1,400 family farmers lost the use of their water because of an endangered species. Under the Endangered Species Act, farmers and ranchers were forced to do without deeded water allotments to protect a bottom-feeding suckerfish and the threatened coho salmon.
But this was an environmental scam, wasn't it? It was basically an effort to drive them off their property because they wanted that for a wilderness area. And this really goes along with the United Nations plan. We have the UN plan that names this as an area that is to become a wilderness area. And they just wanted to take their property using the so-called suckerfish as a justification to take their property illegally.
And they still do. But, you know, they overturned that decision, and the National Academy of Science said there was insufficient scientific data, to justify it off. So it was, the water was turned back on again by Gail Norton, Secretary of Interior, and that was last year. But now, this year, the end of last year, 33,000 dead fish were found at the mouth of the river, and now they're blaming the farmers and the ranchers for using too much water.
And, of course, the whole idea was because the ranchers were using so much water, there wasn't enough for the fish, and that's why they died. And then, of course, you had a report put out by the State Forestry Service, and unfortunately, they used a lot of pretty questionable science, didn't they?
Oh, absolutely. The California Department of Fish and Game put out a report, which is picked up by national media, and then all of a sudden, all across America, the Tule Lake or Klamath Basin farmers are responsible for killing all these fish, when in fact it is not true.
All right, fine. Let's get the true story that you're not getting through the regular media.
Okay, now it's a little difficult for me to explain this, as you remember from when you and I were talking. We're talking about two different lakes, and we're talking about two different dams, and we're talking about two different rivers.
But the two rivers joined together, 30 or 40 miles above where the mouth of the river is, where all the dead fish were?
41 miles above the mouth of the rivers where they join, the dead fish were found on the first 20 miles of the river. And what the Fish and Game is saying is because the water was too warm and too low that the fish got what's called gill rot, and that's what ultimately killed them. But when you look at the Department of Fish and Game report, there's so many inconsistencies in there and so much inaccuracy and unscientific data used that it's not even useless. It's useless as far as I'm concerned. For example, the fish started dying on September 19, 2002, and the Department of Fish and Game said they took samples immediately upon finding the dead fish, when in fact they waited 7 days after they found the first fish.
And but by that, any contaminants in the water would be out in the middle of the ocean, wouldn't it?
Right, exactly it. And but, you know, you have the Klamath River, and then you also have the Trinity River. And the Trinity River flows 15 degrees cooler than the Klamath River. But the government is pumping up to 90% of the water that would ordinarily flow into Trinity River into the Sacramento River. So had they been allowing more water to go into the Trinity, ultimately flowing into the Sacramento, then the fish would not have died.
Now, how long has this been going on, that they've been taking 90% of the water and actually pumping it into the heartland of California?
Well, the exact length of time, Dr. Stan, I don't know, but it's been a long time. But the difference between last year when the fish died and other years is it was an incredibly hot year, and it was also a drought area at the time.
All right.
See, so had it not been for the drought, it probably wouldn't have happened. But they should have at least taken some of that water and pumped it back into the Trinity, and therefore it would have cooled it off, and there would not have been a fish death. And I actually interviewed Native Americans, fish biologists and everything else, and that's how I came to that conclusion. And every single person I interviewed, other than the Department of Fish and Game, said that the fish would not have died.
All right. And then, of course, there were some other things that you found, or at least that you learned that were there, and that is there were a lot of methamphetamine laboratories dumping their products and their byproducts, their poisonous products, into this river close to where the fish died.
Yeah. I'll just read one thing here from the story I'm doing on it. The Department of Fish and Game report state, quote, "No substances were found at the concentrations toxic to fish, and therefore they were not a factor in the 2002 fish kill." But as you remember, I just said they took the test, 7 days later. But a California conservation crew run by John Buttons discovered several large glass flasks used for cooking meth on Opa Creek, a tributary of the Klamath River, 21 miles upstream from the mouth of the river. I remember the dead fish were found 20 miles upriver. So you had 1 mile there that they didn't find dead fish, and it was 1 mile above where this methamphetamine dump was. And it was on Opa Creek, and it was a dump where they had dumped methamphetamine. Now, I'm not saying that that's the cause. What I'm saying is they didn't investigate to find out the possible other causes other than what they just came out and said, that it was the farmers and ranchers using too much water. But I have actually got pictures of methamphetamine dumps along creeks and rivers. I've got quotes from sheriffs and undercover people and everything else, you know, that talk about what chemicals and stuff have been dumped into creeks and tributaries. So the possibility of it being contaminated is very high.
All right, fine. Well, let's go here to Roger calling in from Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger. You have a question or comment?
Yeah, and by the way, on that Klamath River Basin, I heard a rather, maybe just a week old, that at least certain Enviro wackos have joined with the Klamath Basin residents in demanding more abundant water. It's just almost unprecedented to have an infusion of common sense among their ranks.
Well, I'm sorry. What is your point, Roger?
Well, just that. And
You're saying that the environmentalists want the water to go to the farmers?
At least a certain subset of them for whatever limited purposes.
Well, I see. Well, I haven't come into that. I haven't heard that at all. But go ahead. What's your other point?
Well, just this is a really stupid question. Have you ever heard, for all these seminars on civil disobedience, have you ever heard one seminar on persuasion through hard science?
No.
All right. Thanks so much, Roger. And of course, this is the problem, is that they are not using hard science. They're using falsified science. Science is supposed to be based upon knowledge. And these people have a political agenda, and they are using, phony science to justify the political agenda. But unfortunately, sometimes they can get a judge or somebody in a position of authority to go along with them. And then when somebody like the American Academy of Sciences comes out and says, this is junk science, what do you say to the 1,400 families that have been impoverished and some of them have lost their homes, they've had to kill their livestock? I mean, most people cannot live for a year on a farm without an income, and they've totally destroyed them because of this degree of corruption. If they can do that to them and take away their livelihood and their property, they can do it to anybody. Because there's no recourse against, of course, this falsification and the lies. How do the people up in Klamath Basin feel? Are they a little bitter about the way they've been treated?
Oh, bitter. I think they're far beyond bitter, and justifiably so. I've been up there a couple times taking pictures of the fields. Their irrigation equipment is partially covered, you know, with dust from fields. There's six-foot-high weeds out in the fields. Their homes are being unkept. They had to bring in people as counselors to help the people.
I mean, it was because of the emotional turmoil.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, welfare, food stamps. Unfortunately, I hate to say this, but socially there's been an increase in, family problems, that kind of stuff. But can I just tell you, or your listeners, who is responsible for this?
Sure, you go ahead. In fact, I want you to tell them.
Okay, those that originally filed the suit include Glenn Spain of the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Association, the Oregon Natural Resource Council, the Wilderness Society, of which California's Democratic U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein's husband, Richard Bloom, is on the governing council.
He seems to be in everything bad.
Oh, I know it. The North Coast Environmental Center, the Sierra Club, the Golden Gate Audubon, and the Klamath Forest Alliance.
Well, now, does Senator Feinstein then refuse to vote on anything from an environmental nature because of a possible conflict of interest with her husband's interests?
No, there's actually been several stories done about Richard Bloom and Dianne Feinstein, and they say that they keep their work separate and there's no conflict of interest.
How could that be?
Well, I don't know, because my wife and I, used to work for the U.S. Congress and the Senate, and it's absolutely impossible as husband and wife not to have input into what's happening within your work life.
Maybe Diane doesn't talk to her husband or sleep with him or something like that. Anyway, go ahead.
I could understand that, but, you know, I'm sorry. But, you know, when they do this kind of stuff and the impact, and what Roger said there, I've never heard of any environmental groups offering to help these people at all.
Nor have I.
Yeah, and I mean, I've talked to him. I just spent 3 days up there when I interviewed him for this last story, and I asked him who was helping him, and they said, at this point, nobody.
Well, of course, the tragedy is their own legislators, at least some of them, have been against them.
Oh, yeah.
And certainly they didn't get any help from the governor of Oregon or the governor of California. And that was another thing that Bill Simon didn't bring up during that tragedy.
Well, I actually did a story in May of 2001 about all of this. And I interviewed a lady named Jennifer Ludlow, who was Natural Systems Engineering, Utah Water Research Laboratory, research scientist at Utah State University. And she held a symposium at Humboldt State University in Arcata. And following her, she was compiling data for Dr. Tom Hardy of Utah State University, and he's author of the Hardy Flow Report. Now, this report was used 2 times in court cases where the judge ultimately shut the water off to the farmers. And when I interviewed Hardy, I asked her, I said, I have a lot of sources, and I'd really like to know about the inaccurate data you used. And she looked at me and she said, how did you find out? Well, I made it up, Jennifer. But anyway, when I asked her about it, she stated, quote, there were problems, we used some inaccurate data, and that is being looked at now.
Now, who is this person you're speaking of?
She's the she's in charge of compiling data for Tom Hardy of Utah State University, the author of the Hardy Flow Report. But she, when I asked her if it would also make a difference in the report, she said, yes, it very well could. She recanted her statements after I did a story on it and said I wasn't telling the truth. Well, that's a lie, too. But I actually talked to Tom Hardy and Doug Tedrick of the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Washington, D.C., and Ted Tedrick works in conjunction with Secretary of Interior Gail Norton. I ran into him on March 28th in 2002 at a ceremony in Klamath Falls where Gail Norton opened the headgates to restore the water to the farmers, and Doug Tedrick was there. And I confronted him about the statements made by Ludlow that she recanted what I said. And here's his saying, quote, apparently she misunderstood your questions. Yes, there was inaccurate data used in the report, but it was not our data.
Well, then why didn't they bother to check it before they put it out and used it to destroy the families?
Yeah, but see, there again, you go back to, you have all these environmental groups working in conjunction with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and we see the water shut off.
Well, why anybody would trust anything out of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, they have stolen somewhere between $10 and $100 billion from the Indians. They've shredded all the evidence. Bruce Babbitt and, of course, now Gail Norton have been cited for contempt by judges for withholding the information. And they're simply stealing all this, the money from the gas and oil on the Indians' reservation to make up the government deficit, either that or pay off the politicians. And they absolutely refuse to give the money to the Indians. And this has been going on for, 20 or 30 or 40 years. I don't know how long it's been going on. And nothing is ever done to these officials in government who are stealing. I don't blame the Indians for feeling bitter.
Well, I don't either. And, when I talk to you and I talk to other radio shows, I believe in responsible environmentalism and this deal with the water. I think that there's enough water to go around even in drought years if it's handled responsibly. But to shut off the water to a river that ultimately saves the lives of fish for not only the Indians but for fishing and sport fishing and everything else is just flat wrong. You've got things in our society that are right, things that are wrong, and we know what they are.
Well, now, what happened, Barry? Did they shut off the water to the river, or did they just shut it off to the farmers? Because you got a dam there in the Klamath area, and, of course, they shut off the water so the farmers can't get any. But what about the rest of the river? Did the river continue running?
There we go back to that two rivers thing again, and I wasn't being clear. Now, they shut the water off to the farmers totally. But then on the Trinity River, Trinity Lake, when they're pumping the water out to go to the other side of the mountain, it should be coming down on the west side instead of the east side. And that's what ultimately killed the fish, beyond any shadow of a doubt. See, so it's...
And the Indians actually feel that way, at least that one group of Indians there that you talked to.
Yeah, two tribes didn't, but one tribe did. I think that the connection between the environmental groups and the other two tribes make them very biased on their opinion. But the Hoopa tribe is the one who gave me the best interviews and was very, very warm and welcomed me. But like I told you before, you know, that all of these Native Americans that I interviewed on the Hoopa tribe, every single one of them said they had never been interviewed by or never met a journalist before. So how can anybody do a story, an accurate story, if they don't interview the people involved?
Well, they really can't, but they probably go to the local environmentalists, and they get their handout, and they go to the government officials, they get their handout, and then they write their story. And the big tragedy today is we don't have investigative journalism, and we're getting what we're supposed to get, but very seldom the truth.
But it is expensive to do stories like I do.
Well, I'm so glad that you do them. Anyway, we'll just take one quick break. We'll let you then give your wrap-up. And, of course, we have both of Barry Clausen's book here at Radio Liberty and, of course, Burning Rage and Walking on the Edge, both available by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years. Well, this is the time I just need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. If you're out there listening to us here in the Central Coast of California or across America, we hope many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get the four best tapes of the month. You'll get the monthly newsletter. But more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do, and that is reach out across America with the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Now, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, it's available at the same number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Our January newsletter, of course, deals with the threat of biological warfare. Is it a real threat? Is it being contrived to scare us to death and get us so frightened we can't think effectively about what's going on? And then, of course, if you'd like our October newsletter, well, that's Kristen Breitweiser's testimony before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence on the 18th of September last year, totally censored by the controlled media because they don't want you to know what she said. We'll be glad to send you that newsletter. Go up at our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and you can pull down our newsletters. We give you our permission to copy them. We hope you'll go to our website, you'll listen to our radio programs, and of course you'll help us to get the truth out across America, because it's person, people, telling people, telling people. As our listening audience gradually expands across America from sea to shining sea, remember again, our website is www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Tell others about it. Well, Dr. Stan, and our guest is, of course, Barry Clausen, his book, Burning Rage and Walking on the Edge. Barry, would you like to give us your parting thoughts for today?
Well, I mean, I what do I say here? I'm a veteran. I believe in our country, and I believe in our flag, and I believe we have the greatest country in the world. But when we see people like you and I have been talking about today, they're doing nothing but destroying our rights. And myself, I'm not going to allow them to get away with it if I have anything to say about it.
And, of course, I appreciate everything you do and being out there on the front lines and, you know, getting these stories. And, of course, your story on the Klamath River Basin, the meth labs, and, of course, the cutting off the water, of course, cool water, which, of course, allowed the fish to die. When will that be available?
It should be out within the next 10 days, and I probably will post it to my website.
Now, why don't we get your website out there so people will know how to get in touch with you?
Okay, it's northamericanresearch.org.
Northamericanresearch.org.
And I apologize because I'm about 2 months behind on keeping it updated, but I've been so busy I haven't had a chance to do it.
You can't do everything, but we appreciate your willingness to get the information together, to put it on the website at all, and then, of course, to be a guest here. Well, I hope we can get you back on some of our other radio programs in the not-too-distant future.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan.
Goodbye.
Keep up the good work.
I will. Bye-bye, and God bless you.
You too. Bye.
Well, that's Barry Clausen, and Barry's a very, very brave guy, courageous guy, and infiltrating the environmental terrorist movement and actually living among them for almost a year, collecting the information. And it's, of course, laid out in his first book and then the second book, Burning Rage. You have to understand there are people who are using the environmental movement to destroy America. The environmental movement has been described as a watermelon. It's green on the outside, but it's red on the inside. Now, Gorbachev, the former dictator of Russia, the butcher of Afghanistan, the former head of the Soviet KGB, who now, of course, cavorts with Maurice Strong and Stephen Rockefeller. What's Gorbachev, a communist, doing with Stephen Rockefeller, a capitalist? Well, let me tell you, there's very little difference between them because they both want an elitist system. In fact, there was never any communism in Russia. It was always an elitist system with a ruling elite, police, and military that would control the people and watch the people and report on the people and keep dossiers on the people, just exactly as they are developing right here in the United States. You say it couldn't happen here? Ladies and gentlemen, the same spirits of forces that were at work in communist Russia are at work in America today. And if you believe that communism is dead, who do you think is organizing the peace marches in the United States today? Are you organizing? Do you know anybody here is organizing? Of course, they're being organized by the communists. But then who's pouring money into Russia? If you read the Wall Street Journal, you find out we're always looking America, the American government and American corporations and the World Bank and the Agency for International Development and the International Monetary Fund, always looking for another excuse to pour more money into Russia. A fascinating book, it's called Solo, and it was written by a gentleman who had been a communist, that broke with communism, worked for the FBI, and he was the courier bringing the money from the Communist Party into the United States. And, of course, gave it all to the FBI, and they would go through it and mark down all the numbers of the bills, and then, of course, they'd give it to him so he could take it to the communists. Now, do you think for 1 minute that this man this goes to Russia, comes back to the United States, met at the airport by the FBI, taken to FBI headquarters, and the communists have no idea what's going on? Robert Hansen, of course, was working there, and the FBI knew everything that was going on. And, of course, we were financing the communists. When the FBI wanted to stop the operation, Henry Kissinger objected and wouldn't allow it. Gee, I wonder why that was. Of course, that's where they got the money to finance the communist movement here in the United States. Went right through the hands, certainly, of the American Federal Bureau of Investigation. There's so much more behind what's going on that we've ever been allowed to know. So please pray for America. Pray for revival, and please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.
Hello. Yes. Hi, Fred. How are you doing? Right? Well, thank you so very much. I appreciate that. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, bye.
That's it. At least
you
got some action.
What's that?
I see Steve got some action.
Yeah, and that was the best time I've ever had yesterday. But we got to finish. I don't like the end. I don't like the singing at the end.